This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Through education, motivation, and implementation, we will bridge the gap between knowing and doing so we can master fat loss naturally and help you reach your highest potential. Let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. We are going to be talking about extended fasting and all your questions and concerns and curiosities about that. But can I make a quick request, which might seem super lame, but it makes a difference. If you enjoy this podcast, if it's adding value to your life, if you find it helpful in any way, mindset, information, if you haven't already, would you do me this favor and take about 30 seconds, that's all it takes, to leave a rating and review of the podcast wherever you listen, whether that's iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. I know it sounds like such a small, petty thing, but it really does make a difference in terms of helping this show be displayed to people who haven't heard of it, who may benefit from it. So if you have 30 seconds to do that, you haven't done it already, it honestly would mean so much to me. If there's something I can do to make this show better, please let me know. If there's something that I can do more of or less of, something I'm not doing that you want to see, something that you think I don't do well, shoot me an email or comment on the show notes and let me know what that is, because I really do see this as your show and I always want to make it better, more helpful, more valuable. So definitely share with me that feedback if you have it. Today, I am really excited to talk to you about fasting. And if you have listened to episode 300 or 307 or 310, all of those are about fasting. If you've listened to them, you know that last year, just about a year ago now, I did my first ever 5-day fast. And if you're following me on Instagram, you know that I just completed my first ever 7-day fast. 7 days, which is 168 hours, but who's counting? I was definitely counting. 7 days of just water, black coffee, and Himalayan sea salt. And throughout the process, I was sharing lots of video updates on my Instagram stories every day. Throughout the process, I got a lot of questions, whether or not it's healthy, if it slows down your metabolism, if it causes muscle loss, if it puts you in starvation mode, why I did it, what are the benefits, who should do it, how did I do it? And today we are tackling those questions, including who should consider fasting and who should not consider fasting. So I want to dive right in after I remind you quickly that registration closes tomorrow for working with me this spring. As I've shared in the last few episodes, guys, this is going to be the last time I'll be taking new clients for quite a while because of the work I want to do on my book. So registration closes tomorrow. If you want to know more about what it means to work with me and what the process is and how it can shift not only your food habits, your body composition, but also your finances and your relationship because of the way we tackle change, definitely listen to episode 468, or you can register by going to primalpotential.com/transform. primalpotential.com/transform. But if you want to know more, listen to episode 468 of the podcast for sure. And I'll say a little bit more about this after we talk about fasting. But I do want to reiterate that tomorrow is the last day to register. We start on April 1st. And this is the last time for a while, somewhere between 3 and 6 months, that I will be taking on new clients. All right, so fasting. Why did I do this 7-day fast that I just wrapped up? I did a 5-day fast last year. And coming out of it, I wasn't sure I would ever do it again. It was really hard in a lot of ways, and I'll talk about that. But in the weeks after that 5-day fast, I was so excited by the way the fast reframed hunger for me. What I mean by that is, coming out of last year's fast, if I felt hungry, say like an hour after a meal, or even 5 or 6 hours after a meal, and I would have that thought, oh, I'm so hungry, the fast gave me the perspective of, come on, you ate 4 hours ago. You just went 5 freaking days without food. This is not what really hungry looks like. And that was so empowering. It helped me completely develop a different relationship to those hunger pangs that come, whether it's an hour after we eat or 5 hours after we eat. And I felt that was very empowering. I was far less reactive to hunger. I was more calm. And what happened is, the further away from that 5-day fast I got, the less clear that contrast was. So in the month, 2 months, 3 months after the 5-day fast, that was such a strong sentiment. But 6 months later, it wasn't quite as strong because the fast was further from memory. So I was very attracted to experiencing that contrast and that perspective and empowering myself with regard to hunger again. But the other significant reason I wanted to do another fast was detoxification. A lot of you guys have heard me share that just a few months ago, I went through the process of freezing my eggs. I am 34 years old. I am divorced. Kids are not in my short-term future. So I wanted to go through that process just to sort of take advantage of the fact that I won't be any younger than I am today. And that meant daily hormone injections, different oral medications, basically adding a lot of hormones to my system. And I was surprised by how tough that process was on my body, probably in part because of my own sensitivity to hormonal fluctuations, and in part because I hadn't had any exogenous hormones, like I hadn't been on birth control in years and years and years. So it was kind of like a Mack truck to my endocrine system. And even when the injections stopped, my body was still really reeling from that influx of hormones. I could feel that I was just on hormonal overload. So detoxification via a fast seemed like a great idea because of that process. And then there's the other part of it, which is I love to challenge myself. I like to try hard things and push my mental limitations, ways that I've limited myself and what I can do. Because the fact is, am I physically capable of going without food for 7 days? Yes, my body has that capacity and so does yours. But mentally, I doubted myself. So what that represents is a mental limitation that I can remove by doing it. And now that I'm on the other side of it, I made it through the 7-day fast with just water and black coffee and pink sea salt, nothing else, no bone broth, no kombucha, no butter coffee, no nothing. Coming out of it, it's so exciting to clear a mental limitation that you had. So I like seeking those opportunities. It makes me better in every aspect of my life because it's a confidence booster, and it allows me to look at other things that I've told myself I can't do, that are too hard, that I'm not strong enough, and say, you know what? I bet I can, and I'm gonna try. So those are the reasons that contributed to me doing this 7-day fast. I will never do a fast for the primary outcome of fat loss because I don't think that's a great motivator. And I'm gonna talk more about why that is. Yes, I lost fat. No, I didn't check my weight, and I'll talk about why I didn't, but I did take measurements. I did monitor my blood sugar and blood ketones. You don't have to do any of that. You can just fast. But before we go into those specifics, I want to dive into a lot of the questions and misunderstandings and concerns that people have about extended fasting. And one thing that people kept asking me on Instagram when I would do these video updates of how I was feeling and where I was in the fast, I would say, is this a healthy thing? And what I would say is, it's healthy for me. It's healthy for most people, but not all people. It's certainly not unhealthy. It's also not the right approach mentally or physically for everybody. But one of the biggest reasons people question this is because they think, based on what they have been told, that fasting puts you into starvation mode. And that's not true. One thing that people assume happens when you fast is that your body burns muscle. And that's not true. Fasting does not lead to burning muscle unless you have no fat to burn. And that is the case that is seen in clinical research when people are at about 4% body fat or lower. And I'm going to guess that very, very few of you who can hear my voice right now are at 4% body fat or lower. In fact, for females, if you are at 4% or lower, chances are you're dealing with some serious health complications. But if you are at 4% body fat or lower, or even 6 to 8% body fat or lower, don't do extended fasting. You can do intermittent fasting. But here's what's important for the rest of us, the majority of us who have body fat over 4%, which I certainly do. It doesn't burn muscle. Your body doesn't burn your muscle tissue when you do an extended fast because muscle is not a fuel reserve for the body. It's not. Glycogen is, right? Glycogen, long chains of glucose that are stored in your muscle and your liver, those are fuel storage spaces in the body. Fat is fuel storage, right? So when you fast, you first burn through your liver glycogen and your muscle glycogen, and depending on the individual and their muscle mass and their diet, of course, this takes anywhere from 24 to 36 hours. That storage space in your liver and your muscle for glycogen is finite. Fat storage, on the other hand, is essentially unlimited. There are a couple things we need to keep in mind about this muscle glycogen. Remember, your body is using this first. So your first 24 to 36-ish hours of a fast, your body is turning to that stored glycogen, glycogen long chains of glucose. There's something we need to remember, actually two things we need to remember about the muscle glycogen storage. This is not muscle tissue. It's chains of glucose called glycogen stored in the muscle. And the second thing we need to remember about this muscle glycogen, it can only be used by the muscle. Glycogen stored in the liver can flow in and out of the liver in the form of glucose, right? Breaks away from the chain. Glucose can come in and out of the liver to be stored in the liver or to be used by the body when it comes out. But it's only a one-way street into the muscle reserves. So when you're fasting, your muscles are going to use that stored glycogen. The liver is going to break down that stored glycogen and send it to other places in the body other than your muscle tissue that need it. And after that, when that's gone, you switch over to using fat as fuel. You're not using protein. And we're going to talk more about this in a few minutes for those of you that are concerned about muscle wasting when fasting. But another common concern people have about fasting is, oh my gosh, my blood sugar is going to crash. And this isn't something that people are concerned about only when they are fasting, but even if they go 4, 5, 6 hours without eating, they're like, oh no, my blood sugar crashed. Now, I'm not talking about type 1 diabetics here. I'm talking about the rest of us. But blood sugar, there's a little scientific lesson that helps us understand what happens to our blood sugar when we fast. So when we're using that stored glycogen in the liver and the muscle tissue, we don't have to worry about blood sugar because that glucose is going to make it to the blood, keep our blood sugar really steady and stable. Well, what happens when we switch over after we've used up that glycogen, when we switch over to the fat, what happens to our blood sugar? As you break down fat, you basically break down the fat into its building blocks. Fat is stored in the form of a triglyceride. So its building blocks are three fatty acids and a glycerol backbone. That glycerol backbone is used to make glucose. So you have enough glucose to keep your blood sugar stable when you are fasting and metabolizing fat. Early stages of the fast, you're using glycogen, easy, glucose, right? when you switch over to burning fat as fuel, you keep your blood sugar stable because fat metabolism allows glucose to be generated from one of the components of a triglyceride, which is glycerol. And I tested my blood sugar every day throughout the fast, and it was steady Eddie. Did it come down some? Yes. But it was always very stable. It's not like you're going to, you know, totally crash your blood sugar and end up passed out on the floor. That could happen if you are dehydrated, and we'll talk about the importance of both water and salt, but it's not going to be a result of low blood sugar. When people feel shaky or really hungry on a fast, that's not necessarily because of blood sugar fluctuations. It's very much likely due to electrolytes and to hydration. Okay, so that is a really important thing to keep in mind in terms of blood sugar. And then the fat metabolism byproduct is ketones. And ketones become the preferential fuel source for the body after we work through those liver and muscle glycogen reserves. All right, one of the great benefits of fasting, and one of the great reasons to incorporate it, even if you're not doing something really extended like 7 days, is that fasting helps train your body to become a more efficient fat burner. For most of us, we eat so often, regular meals, regular snacks, and we eat so much, often turning to food because we want something, not because our body truly needs fuel, that our body never needs to dip into our fat storage for fuel. We never give it that opportunity because we're always putting fuel in the pipeline. And even when we don't, it's just for a little while and our body turns to our glycogen reserves in the liver and the muscle. I want my body to be an efficient fat burner, so I have to give it these opportunities. I intentionally keep my glycogen stores pretty low, and I do that by not eating a lot of starch and sugar. And when I do eat it, certainly not overeating, right? I do that by working out because that helps with the muscle glycogen. Remember, it can only be used by the muscle, so working out is a great way to keep those reserves from getting full and staying full. But I also want to do it via fasting. And the fact that this fast felt so much better for me than the last one tells me that my body is more efficient as a fat burner this year than it was last year. And we'll talk about some of the other reasons this fast felt so much easier in a few minutes. What happens when we fast? And I am talking about a true fast with no fuel, not a modified fast where we're having some calories coming in, whether it's from kombucha or bone broth or butter coffee or anything like that. When we are in a true fast, water, you don't have to have black coffee. Black coffee doesn't add anything to the fast. It's just that it doesn't take away anything from the fast because we're not looking at calories ingested. So you can certainly not have black coffee and just do water and salt, or you can do tea. But we're not adding milk, we're not adding sugar, and I wouldn't have any fruit teas for two reasons. The first reason is that sometimes there are trace amounts of sugars in those fruit teas because they're derived from fruits, and that can trigger a minor insulin response. And even if it's not significant enough to prevent you from burning fat, which probably won't be, what it does is it makes hunger and cravings rear up, and I think that makes the fast harder. But the other thing is that even a sweet taste, people will say, like, what about diet soda? That has no calories. There is something called the cephalic phase insulin response. And when we have something that is non-nutritive, like diet soda, like chewing gum, that tastes sweet, our body preemptively secretes insulin. It's called the cephalic phase insulin response. I've talked about it here on the podcast before, and it will make the fast harder for you, and it will decrease the benefits that you get from it. So anyway, what happens when we do a true fast, not ingesting calories, just sticking to water and salt, if you like coffee or non-fruit teas like an Earl Grey or something like that, what happens is insulin stays low. Insulin is triggered when we ingest fuel or we ingest sweet things. And when insulin is low, fat burning is allowed. insulin being elevated prevents fat burning because insulin and a hormone called glucagon work like a seesaw. So when insulin is up, glucagon is down. And glucagon is the hormone that tells the body, hey, you can burn fat now. So when we're fasting, we're not having that insulin response, which means glucagon goes up and fat burning is allowed in the body. The other thing that happens when we fast, glucagon isn't the only hormonal benefit, growth hormone goes up. Growth hormone tends to decline significantly as we age, and growth hormone levels are really elevated in kids and in teenagers, and this is why they seem to be able to eat so much and stay their current weight versus adults who experience something very different. But when growth hormone goes up, that has tremendous anti-aging benefits. It has tremendous healing and recovery and repair benefits. And growth hormone goes up significantly when we're fasting. On the flip side, eating suppresses growth hormone. Overeating dramatically suppresses growth hormone. So we don't see this growth hormone increase when we're eating. We don't see this growth hormone increase even when we're severely restricting calories, like we're on a low calorie diet. And we don't see this growth hormone increase as much when we do modified fasting where we're including calories from bone broth or kombucha or butter coffee or anything like that. One question that is very common about fasting is, how is fasting any different from low-cal diets? And we hear how low-calorie diets are so bad for our metabolism. Or even people will say, well, I'm not doing a true fast, but I'm doing bulletproof coffee fasting. So I'm having bulletproof coffee and nothing else. Or I'm doing a bone broth fast or a juice fast. There is a dramatic difference hormonally in doing a low-calorie diet versus a no-calorie fast. And the science is laid out very well in a very easy and clear way to understand in the book, The Complete Guide to Fasting. I will link to that over in the show notes at primalpotential.com. So primalpotential.com/469 is the show notes page for this episode. I will link to that book, but it goes into deep, deep research looking at the difference hormonally and metabolically between low-calorie diets and true fasting. The bottom line is low-calorie diets, whether that is your juice fast or your crash diet or whatever, lowers your metabolic rate. And we don't see the hormonal benefits with growth hormone and adrenaline, etc., that we see with fasting. Fasting, on the other hand, increases your metabolic rate anywhere from, say, 8 to 15%. And fasting increases glucagon, decreases insulin. Fasting increases growth hormone. It increases adrenaline. It increases something called autophagy, which is basically detox at the cellular level, getting rid of the dead, broken, not working parts of the cells. And we don't see those benefits with low-calorie approaches. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But the reality is, hormonally, low-calorie diets are dramatically different from true fasting. When you're on a low-calorie diet, yes, your insulin secretion is probably going to be lower, but it's still elevated enough to prohibit the true hormonal shift that comes from fasting. So what are some of the benefits of these extended fasts? As we've already talked about, fat burning is certainly one of them. Once we get past that point of working through our glycogen reserves, which is going to be different for everybody, but approximately on average 24 to 36 hours, then we start to see our body shift to burning fat as fuel. And not only is that great for fat loss, especially fat loss, not just the cosmetic fat that we don't like around our belly or our hips or our arms, but more important to health, the fat that's in our organs, right? The fat that's in our liver. That's the stuff that really causes disease. And that's where your body goes first, which is one of the reasons why doing this for cosmetic reasons is not a great approach. But fat burning, of course, is one benefit. And part of fat burning is training your body to be an efficient fat burner. One of the other benefits is that word autophagy. that I mentioned earlier. I am a linguist, former Latin major, so I love words. Auto being self, right? Phagy meaning to eat. So it is eating your cells, but really more specifically, more accurately, more scientifically, our cells decay and they break down and problems happen. And these cellular breakdowns, malfunctions, broken pieces and parts, that's where disease comes from. Whether it's something a little benign like inflammation or something that becomes cancerous, when we trigger autophagy, we are improving our health. We are allowing our bodies to clean up, to repair. And autophagy is activated by fasting. It's kind of like having a self-cleaning oven, but never using it, right? And our body has this self-cleaning ability, but we rarely turn it on. And fasting is one way to turn it on. And maybe talking about other ways to turn this on next week on the podcast. Just know for now that this cellular cleansing is one of the benefits of fasting. And I think it's also a big part of the reason that my skin improvements were so notable during this fast. Just clearer skin, softer skin, fewer wrinkles even. And I shouldn't use plural there. So the short version of the story is, for the last year or so, there's been this one wrinkle on my face. And for whatever reason, probably because it's the only one on my face and it's very pronounced, it drives me a little bonkers. And just a few weeks ago, I said to my boyfriend, I don't know what to do about this wrinkle. It's making me crazy. And of course, he rolled his eyes. But around day 5 of the fast, for the first time in a year, I was like, oh my word, that wrinkle is gone. So one of the other benefits of fasting is improving your insulin responsiveness. And this is so huge. This is not just about fat loss. When we improve our body's ability to respond, our body's efficiency in responding to insulin, this helps our hunger become more manageable. It helps our cravings become more manageable. It improves our health. It reduces our risk of all sorts of diseases like heart disease and stroke. It is such a big deal. And many of us, whether because of decades of yo-yo dieting or being overweight or regularly consuming and overconsuming starch and sugar, we just don't respond very efficiently and effectively to insulin. And fasting is one way to really improve your body's sensitivity to insulin. There's also some mental clarity benefits of switching from burning sugar to burning ketones. I talked on a previous episode of the podcast about how glucose, when we're burning sugar as fuel, it kind of burns dirty. And what I mean by that is it produces a lot of free radicals. So it kind of creates pollution in the body when we burn sugar. When we burn fat, a byproduct of which is ketones, it's a much cleaner burning fuel in the body. So it produces less cellular pollution than burning sugar does. And while that's amazing for your health, it also has a physical experience of focus, clarity, energy, etc. So for more on the details, I think The Complete Guide to Fasting is a great book. I'll link to it in the show notes. I want to return to that fear of burning muscle really quickly. We touched on it a little bit, but the bottom line here is unless you are extremely low body fat, 4% or lower, but even if we put a little buffer on it and say 6% or lower, you're not going to burn muscle because muscle is not a fuel reserve for the body. Glycogen is and fat is. And I don't know where I heard this analogy. It could be in The Complete Guide to Fasting, but that doesn't sound right, but it might be. But the way that I once heard this explained is like, if you were trying to stoke a fire in your house and you had a huge pile of wood next to the fireplace, you wouldn't throw in the sofa, right? Because the sofa is not for burning. The wood is for burning and you have wood. And your body is so intelligent. That's how it looks at fat and glycogen versus muscle. First you have glycogen, great, it's gonna burn it. Then you have fat, great, it's gonna burn it. It's not going to turn to your muscle tissue unless you don't have fat to burn. So will you burn fat on a fast is a very common question. And people usually ask, will you lose weight? Well, yes, you'll definitely lose weight no matter how long the fast is, because you're going to shed water. You're going to work through that glycogen. You're going to lose some salt. So there will be a lot of water weight. But will you burn fat depends on the length of your fast, right? Because if you don't fast beyond working through your glycogen, then you might lose weight, but you won't necessarily burn fat. That's one of the reasons, as I mentioned earlier, that I don't recommend checking your weight as a metric for success on a fast. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one is you're going to see a lot of water weight from shedding salt and from shedding water, obviously. The other reason is you also don't have any food in your system. And on a normal day, even if you check your weight in the morning, you still have food in the pipeline from the day before. So obviously you're going to see your weight go down, but that's not necessarily a true indicator of fat loss. And people get super frustrated when they're like, yeah, I did all this work of a fast and I lost 10 pounds, but I put it all back on. Chances are on a fast, you'll put back on some of the weight from water, from having food in the pipeline again. But if you've burned fat, you probably won't put that back on unless you start overeating and eating a lot of starch and sugar, right? I mean, if you're doing this as part of a yo-yo, like, yeah, don't do all that hard work for that. That's a real red flag that fasting isn't the right approach for you. But what I do recommend is checking your measurements, right? But don't expect that after a 24-hour fast or a 36-hour fast, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, my hips are smaller, right? That's just crazy talk. Now, when we talk about the fact that in the first 24 hours, say, you're probably burning glycogen, people will be like, oh my gosh, so it's not even worth it to do a 24-hour fast. Why would I do a 24-hour fast? You said that's a great place to start, and I stand by that. Here's why. Working through your stored glycogen is a great thing, because remember, when that storage space is full, it means that any sugar excess you consume beyond what your body needs for fuel gets converted to fat and stored in your adipose tissue. So doing a 24-hour fast is a great idea, even though it's not for fat burning. Number one, it is building up your ability to do those longer fasts. You're working mentally on resilience and durability in response to hunger. And number three, you're clearing out some of those liver and muscle glycogen reserves so that when you consume starch or sugar, you're less likely to have it converted to and stored as fat. So shorter term fasting is not without merit. Don't be like, oh my gosh, I thought I was doing something good by doing a 24-hour fast. Just because you aren't necessarily getting to the point where your body needs to tap into your fuel reserves does not mean that it is without merit. Shorter term fasting is a great way to work through those glycogen reserves and reduce the chances that when you consume starch and sugar, it is converted to and stored as fat. Short-term fasting isn't the only way to do that, though. You can do that via exercise, right? One common question that I got, and we've sort of touched on this, but I want to address it again, maybe a little bit more specifically, is, did you have bone broth, Elizabeth? People said, when you're doing your 7-day fast, have you had any bone broth or kombucha or butter coffee? If you introduce fuel, short answer, no, I did not. None of that. Just water, just black coffee, just pink sea salt. And I'm going to talk to the pink sea salt in just a minute. When you introduce fuel, whether it's fat because you had some butter coffee, bulletproof coffee, whether it's sugar, even a couple of grams because you had some kombucha, or it's protein because you had some bone broth or you put some collagen in your black coffee, that's not a true fast. Again, it doesn't mean it's not without merit, that it's not without benefits, but true fasting is no fuel. Anything else is modified fasting, and that's not without merit, but it's not true fasting. Don't get hung up on the rules and definitions, and is this an actual fast? Like, is it an improvement for you? Is it working for you? Are you getting the results you want? Great, do it. I will tell you that when I did the 5-day fast last year, I believe that one of the reasons it was harder is because on day one, I had a bottle of kombucha. It was very low sugar, I think like 2 grams of sugar in the bottle. I had the lemon cayenne Kavita. I had that on day one. And then on like day 3, I think, I had maybe a cup of bone broth The reason I believe that made it harder for me is because that produced just a little bit of an insulin response because I put fuel in my system. Insulin is deployed in response to fuel. And what that can do is kick up hunger and cravings, right? And so keeping it low, no fuel at all, I believe made it easier, not harder. So I want to take a few minutes and talk about what I did differently on this 7-day fast compared to last year's 5-day fast and how my experience felt different. So this fast that just ended was 7 days. The last one was 5 days. At the time, 5 days was by far my longest fast, and this time 7 days was my longest fast. Last year when I did the 5-day fast, I was staying with my friend at her house, so I flew there, stayed there. This one I was at home. I think that made it easier being at home. Being in my own space, having my own stuff around me, that was easier. Now, here's another big thing. On my 5-day fast last year, I worked out daily because I felt like I could, right? And I felt like I could have on this one too, but I didn't. I did not work out on this 7-day fast except for right before I broke the fast. I did a really quickie, low-intensity, at-home kettlebell workout about 2 hours before I broke my fast. I could have worked out. You can too. But I am sure that not working out this time is part of why it was easier. I made the choice to not work out for a couple of reasons. Number one, I wanted to see if it changed things, and I believe it did. And number two, because my primary goal was detox, and working out is a physical stressor on the body. And so to really maximize the detox, I didn't want those stressors. So you can work out, but I didn't. I did on the 5-day. I didn't on the 7-day. I'm glad I didn't. I think it made it easier. Last time on the 5-day fast, I didn't use salt. And this time I did. And I think that made a really significant difference. I'm going to talk about why salt, how much salt in a few minutes. The last thing that was very different in this fast compared to the last one is my attitude. I decided that if I was going to fast, I was going to be joyful about it. Period, the end. And I get that that sounds corny, but here's the deal. Last year with the 5-day fast, I was freaking miserable. And I complained the whole time. This sucks. I feel terrible. I'm hungry. I'm irritable. I'm grumpy. I'm this. I'm that. And I was a victim of my own decision. Nobody forced me to do it. I made a choice to try something and I had a crappy attitude until the last day. I felt good on the last day, but I have no doubt that focusing on how crappy I felt made me feel worse. And this time I decided to be really positive and joyful about it. This is a learning experience. I can stop at any time, but I'm excited to go through this. And so having that disposition this time, I am sure made a massive difference. So how did I feel this time? It was way, way easier. I experienced hunger for sure, but less hunger than last time. Last time I was super grumpy, super irritable, didn't want to do anything. And this time I didn't experience that. I had my moments of like, ugh, but because I chose to be joyful about it, they were very short moments and it wasn't like my whole experience as it was last time. Last time I did the 5-day fast, I had a tremendous amount of trouble focusing and I remember it being very hard to do my work. This time I didn't experience any of that. I had a couple of moments where I was just a little like distracted, but the truth is, I experience that even when I'm not fasting. So I don't think that was related to the fast. And I just had a little bit of salt and I got back to work and that was the end of it. Last time when I did the 5-day fast last year, I had a miserable time sleeping. This time I had no trouble sleeping at all. And I think a lot of that has to do with two factors. Number one, salt. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. And number two, not including any fuel. Remember when I did the 5-day fast, I had one cup of bone broth around day 3. I had one bottle of low sugar kombucha on day 1. And I think that not having any fuel and what that allowed growth hormone to do really helped me to sleep. So what did I notice in terms of benefits? Well, I will first say that I think the majority of the benefits come after the fast is over in terms of how you respond to hunger and how you approach food and all of that. So I'm just a day out of the fast as I record this. So I think the majority of the benefits are yet to come. But I did notice a decrease in my measurements. I only took measurements around my waist because I just didn't want to take the time to do the rest of it. But I did notice a difference. I did notice my midsection leaning out. I did notice a huge improvement in my skin. What was hard on the fast? Mentally, it can be tough. I like food. I wanted to eat. There were definitely moments of, I'm really hungry. But they were moments, right? There was no single hunger pang that lasted more than 30 seconds to a minute. And the reality is, this is true whether we're fasting or we're not. These are waves of sensation. And it's so important to realize that you don't have to respond to it. Get to the other side of it. Day 3 was the hardest for me. And I had a moment of, I just don't want to do this. But I always challenge myself to get through that moment. It's just a moment. It's just a wave. Get to the other side instead of reacting to the peak of the feeling. A lot of people asked me, like, when did you get over the hump? Like, at what point did it stop sucking and become easy? A lot of people think of fasting, but really life in general, as sort of hard, 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 easy. But that hasn't been my experience with fasting or life, and I don't think that's most people's experience either. I think there's just intermittent moments of hard and easy, and you sort of go back and forth between them. Now, Jimmy Moore, who is the co-author of The Complete Guide to Fasting, he shared that that was kind of his experience, that this fast was just easy. And he's done a lot more fasts, so maybe you don't have hard moments after a while. But for me, what was true on this fast and the last fast and throughout my whole life in general and most of my clients' lives is that there are tough moments and there are easy moments, and then there are more tough moments, and then there are easy moments. And sometimes there are stretches of tough moments and there are stretches of easy moments, but we're always in this cycle, this pattern of hard and easy. The key is to realize that it won't always feel as crappy as it feels right now. The challenge is we get so focused on that moment of hard that we feel like we have to do something about it. And my challenge to myself and my challenge to you is get to the other side of that moment. It's not about, oh my gosh, I have 6 more days, I can't do this. This moment of, I don't want to do it and I feel terrible, is gonna pass. So ride the wave and consider that perspective even when you're not fasting, when you're really hungry or you're facing temptation. So many of us respond to that moment of temptation because it feels like it's gonna last forever. No, it's not. You're just at the peak of a sensation. We don't have to react to everything. Experience it and allow yourself to get to the other side. I want to shift gears and talk about the salt. This is something I did not experience before. I didn't use salt on my first 5-day fast, but I did on the 7-day fast, and it was so helpful. So first and foremost, what kind of salt? Pink Himalayan sea salt. The reason for that is it's not just sodium. It also has trace amounts of other minerals. And the reason we want this is because it helps balance our electrolytes. And when insulin is lower, we shed water and we shed salt. Because when insulin is elevated, we retain water and we retain salt. And so replenishing some of that salt is going to really help you feel more satiated, more clear-headed. And so the pink Himalayan sea salt isn't just sodium as we think of it. It's also trace amounts of other minerals that, like magnesium, potassium, etc., that help us with those moments of hunger, those moments of fatigue, those moments of ugh. And I really believe it was a game changer for me. So what do you do with the salt? you put it in your mouth. I didn't put it in my water. I certainly didn't put it in my coffee. You could put it in your water, but I don't personally like that. So here's what I did. I got a bag from Thrive Market. It's Thrive brand pink Himalayan sea salt, but it's the crystals. It's not granulated salt. The cool thing about the crystal is it helped me to just take one instead of like, well, how much should I do? How big of a pinch? A big pinch? A little pinch? I was just taking one crystal and it gave me something to suck on, right? Jimmy Moore suggests putting it under your tongue. And the reason for that is it's absorbed more quickly because there are lots of capillaries and blood vessels, and it allows the salt to get directly absorbed into the bloodstream. But you also have those capillaries and stuff in your cheeks. So I don't think it's too much of a difference to just have it in your mouth. But I didn't like the way it felt under my tongue. It was just a little rough. It got kind of chalky. So I just put it in my mouth and I sucked on it. And it made such a big difference. Now, people want to know, like, how much? It depends, right? There were days where I probably turned to salt like 10 times. And there were other days where it was like 2. So it really depends on you and where you're at and how you're feeling in the fast. You don't have to worry about overdoing it. You're not going to sit there and have salt in your mouth all day long. But I would do it if I felt like one of those hunger pangs, or in the couple of moments where I just felt kind of like, meh, not so great. I would have salt and I seriously felt better almost instantly. Don't use standard table salt, please. You don't have to use this pink salt from Thrive Market, though I get it because I like the fact that it's crystals. And a lot of times when you find crystals, they're like in a grinder. And this wasn't in a grinder. When you buy it from Thrive, it's just in a little bag. But when you use standard table salt, that is mostly sodium chloride. And the other ingredients, the other 2.5% or so, is usually like anti-caking chemicals, so it doesn't clump. You don't want that in your body. When we look at the Himalayan pink salt, about 85% of it is sodium chloride, but the other 15% is all sorts of different trace elements and minerals, whether it, you know, phosphorus, calcium, potassium, magnesium, etc. And that really helps to balance the electrolytes so that you feel better as you fast. I really think that the other part of it was just sucking on something, having this thing in my mouth. It would usually take a few minutes for this little crystal to dissolve. It just mentally was a real help. I didn't want to use granulated. A lot of you probably have granulated Himalayan salt. Because A, it would just like big pinch, little pinch, I don't know. And if you inhale when you have that in your mouth, you start coughing. That's not fun. So that was a big help to me. I will link to the salt that I used in the show notes for this episode. So primalpotential.com/469 and use it as needed. How did you get through those moments of hunger? That was one of the common questions I got. Just stay in the moment and ride the wave. Don't think of how long you have to go. And this is true even when you're not fasting. Look, I can make it through this moment. It's gonna fade. I'm at the peak of the wave, and we can't continue to act like a moment or an urge is gonna last forever. Get to the other side of it. It's no different. This is also true, like you wanna scream at your spouse or you wanna send a snarky email. You're not gonna always feel that way. So get to the other side of the moment. Get to the other side of the feeling. A lot of people asked what the hard moments were like and if I experienced like some keto euphoria bliss kind of thing. The hard moments was mostly just either hunger or not hunger, but I want to eat. One night I was watching a movie with my boyfriend and there were like burritos on the movie. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'd love a burrito, which is why I had what I had when I broke my fast, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. But the hunger was never, it's not painful, right? Hunger doesn't hurt. It's uncomfortable, but it's not pain. And so I would remind myself, this isn't comfortable, but it's not painful. And so I would not allow myself to give in to the drama and the complaining of like, oh, this sucks. I'm miserable. I'm starving. I'm not starving. I'm hungry, but it's not painful, right? I can get through this moment. I can get to the other side of this moment. And like I said, no hunger pang lasted for more than 30 seconds to a minute. The hardest moment was probably on day 3. And I was in the car with my boyfriend. And I think I said, like, I feel like I just hit the wall. But that's not a sensation that's unique to fasting. That's happened to me when I'm not fasting. Like, oh, I just hit the wall. I'm suddenly feeling kind of tired and blah and unfocused. So I just had a salt rock crystal and, you know, it passed. I got to the other side of the moment. How many really hard moments were there when I wanted to quit? A few. But here's a great part of mindset training, right? If I complain about it and I'm so miserable and this sucks and I hate this and I want to quit, then I would. But I would just remind myself, this is a fleeting moment. It's going to pass. I'm going to get to the other side of it, right? A lot of people wanted to know if I was in a state of ketosis prior to the fast. Like, am I on a keto diet going into the fast? Was I keto adapted? And the answer is no. Here's why. One thing about a keto diet, it's not just high fat, it's also very low carb, and how low carb varies from person to person. It's entirely individual. We all tolerate different amounts of carbohydrate. So it's high fat, it's very low carb, it's moderate protein, right? And I'm all about higher fat, moderate protein, and I am very low, almost no starch and sugar. However, personally, I eat a lot of non-starchy vegetables. Whether that's leafy greens, it's cauliflower, it's Brussels sprouts, it's cabbage, they keep me full. They're a huge part of what works for me. And I eat more of them than what my body would allow in order to be in a state of ketosis, right? So no, I was not in ketosis prior to the fast. I wasn't quote unquote keto adapted, but I do eat in a way that keeps my blood sugar really stable, and I avoid things that spike insulin like starch and sugar. So I'm pretty well fat adapted, meaning my body knows how to burn fat. So I was not in ketosis prior to the fast, but I was monitoring blood ketones throughout the fast, and they definitely rose as the fast went on. How did I break the fast? This is so important, and I shared a bunch of it on my Instagram stories, did some videos on my Instagram stories about that. So the key when you break a fast, especially an extended fast, it's been days since you've eaten anything, is you want to sort of prime your system a little bit. Remember that for 7 full days, my digestive enzymes were dormant. They weren't needed, right? There wasn't a tremendous amount of activity happening in my intestines and in my stomach. So I wanted to prime my body a little bit. And I did that with bone broth. So I got a bottle of Epic brand bone broth. It was the beef jalapeno flavor. I got it from Thrive Market because that stuff is expensive. It's usually like $10 retail, but I think it's $6.99 through Thrive. But you don't have to use bone broth. And Thrive also has, and I buy, their Pacific brand is a good bit cheaper. They also have a Thrive Market brand that's cheaper than the Epic brand. But I got the Epic brand. I will link to what I got, what I used to break my fast, over on the show notes for this episode. But I used the Epic brand beef jalapeno bone broth from Thrive Market. And I just had a cup of it about an hour before eating. So I was actually preparing the meal when I had the bone broth. And that just gets digestive enzymes being produced again. It gets blood flow to your stomach, to your intestines. And so you're kind of warming up the car before you drive it. So I did that. And then, and I'm not just saying this because I hadn't eaten in 7 days, I made one of the best meals I've ever made, seriously. And I kept asking my boyfriend, do I think this is so amazing just because I haven't eaten? He's like, no, this is seriously really good. I made cilantro, lime, cauliflower rice, steak burrito bowls. Guys, this is now like my favorite meal. It was so good. And I'm going to be sending out the recipe to my free VIP email list on Sunday of this week. You do not want to miss this recipe. It is seriously epic. If you are not on the VIP list, you can just text the word primal to the number 44222. So if you're in the United States, you can join the VIP list by texting the word primal to the number 44222, or you can just go to primalpotential.com/join, J-O-I-N, primalpotential.com/join, and you can get on the VIP email list there. You do not want to miss this recipe. All right, so that's how I broke the fast, but then what? A lot of people are afraid that you're just going to go crazy and gorge yourself after a fast. A lot of that has to do with your belief. if you believe that that's what you're going to do, then it's probably not a great time for you to fast, right? Because so much of what we choose depends on how we think about what we'll choose. So get to a point where you're more confident in your consistent clean eating. And we'll talk about that in a minute in terms of who shouldn't fast. But I wasn't worried about that because that's not how I operate consistently over time. So it's not how I'm going to operate when I break a fast. But I'm not just going to dive into eating the way I was eating. 7 days without food, you know, your body isn't necessarily going to be most effective or efficient diving right back into normal eating. So I broke the fast at night with the bone broth and the dinner that I just shared with you. Then the next day, so that was on a Monday, the next day I fasted all day until dinner. And then I had dinner a little bit more substantial. I made spicy deviled eggs, and my boyfriend and I are actually doing a little bit of a fun cooking competition. So he was making dinner. He made a salmon dish. So I had deviled eggs and that salmon dish. That was Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, I basically did a modified fast all day Wednesday. I just had one cup of a drink that I'm going to share with you the details of. It's specifically for autophagy, activating autophagy. I'm going to share with that with you on Monday's episode, but that was all I had on Wednesday. Now, that's not necessarily normal for me, but again, I'm transitioning my body back into fuel. So after the fast, I had two pretty big meals, and then I just wanted to like ease off for a day until Thursday morning. I had my cabbage salad bowl as brunch, and then I went out to dinner and had a big Cobb salad. So that's a very typical day of food for me. And then my plan for Friday, which is tomorrow, when you're listening to this, is to fast until dinner and then have a normal fat loss friendly dinner. So for the week after fasting, a week after no food, I'm basically varying lengths of intermittent fasting to ease my body back into what is normal for me. Who should not fast? Well, we already talked earlier about if you have, say, 6% body fat or less, probably not, probably not. But if you're above 6%, even if you're 8, 10, 12%, even lean individuals have roughly 30 to 50,000 calories of stored fat on their bodies. You can fast. But if you're under that 6%, certainly 4% or lower, don't do it. If you're taking meds that need to be taken with food, okay, don't go without food. And here's the big one, guys. If you are not consistent with clean nutrition, clean eating, don't fast. Get consistent with eating clean before you mess around with fasting. If you're solely doing it for a crash diet to lose weight fast, don't fast. Because you're going to lose some water and your weight's going to go down because you don't have food in your system, and you're going to put that weight back on from the water, from having food in your system again. So if your sole priority is fat loss, do that with consistently clean nutrition, and then you can layer on fasting. If your thought is, oh, I can lose 10 pounds before this trip or this event, red flag, don't fast. Fasting is right for you if you are consistently eating clean now. That's number one. If that's not you, do not fast. If you want to improve your response to hunger and you consistently eat clean, then go ahead and give it a try, but build up slowly. So I had done some 24 and 36, and maybe even a 48-hour fast before my 5-day fast. And then I did a 5-day fast before I did my 7-day fast. But you can always start with intermittent fasting, whether that is 16 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, but build up to it. Right? And remember that this is a strategy for people who are consistently eating clean. And if you're not, then work on that first. That is going to be the best thing you can do for your health, the best thing you can do for your body composition, etc. So I want to remind you guys that that recipe that is now my favorite meal, legit, it was so good. It came from an inspiration watching a movie, but I'm going to be sending out that recipe, and it is so worth it, to the VIP email list this coming Sunday. So if you're not on it, then text the word primal to the number 44222, or just go to primalpotential.com/join to get on the VIP list. You don't want to miss that. If you want to play around with fasting and you want to make sure you have that salt on hand, do that. Makes it easier. I will link to it in the show notes, as well as the bone broth that I use to break my fast. If you want to give Thrive Market a try, because their prices are just better, go to thrivemarket.com/primalpotential. When you register through that URL, thrivemarket.com/primalpotential, you get an additional 25% off your first order. Plus you get free shipping on your first order and a 30-day trial membership for free. Do that. And lastly, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is your last opportunity to work with me in the 12 Weeks to Transformation coaching group. There will not be new groups this summer. Maybe not this fall. I haven't decided yet. If you've got questions about if it's right, if it'll help you, how it works, what you can expect, what my approach is, listen to episode 468, but do it now. Do it now because registration closes on Friday. We kick off on April 1st. I put all of my heart and soul into these groups and helping people create transformations that not only change their eating habits, their body composition, but their mentality, their happiness in life, their relationships, their finances. It's so much fun. It's such a great opportunity. And I just want to make sure that everybody's clear because I don't want anybody coming back and being like, I wanted to do it this summer or this fall. And I'm like, I'm not taking new clients anymore. So listen to episode 468 for sure. Do that now. Or go to primalpotential.com/transform if you want to register. primalpotential.com/transform. There's also a lot more details on that link. primalpotential.com/transform. If you have questions about fasting that I didn't address today, check out, or actually go to the show notes for this episode. So primalpotential.com/469 will take you to the show notes for this episode, and leave a comment, leave your question, and I will do a follow-up episode if we have those questions. Have a great day, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Primal Potential Podcast, where my goal is not to inform you, but to transform you. And if you would like to receive free motivation and strategy and recipes, workouts, meal ideas every week right to your inbox, just text the word PRIMAL to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. It's a great way to get the tools, the strategies, and the practical implementation assistance that you need to create your own transformation between podcast episodes. Just text the word PRIMAL to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. See you there.